Hello, welcome along to Soundtrackin', my weekly dive into the world of film and music and its beautiful relationship. My name is Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for being with us this week. Really appreciate it. Exciting times. There's loads of great things around. We've got another Soundtrackin' Everyman Film Club happening on Tuesday night with Sam Taylor-Johnson, Ian Cook and Giles Martin talking about Back to Black. And we're hopefully going to have one with Rose Glass talking about Love Lies Bleeding and a few others on the horizon, but I'll keep you posted on all of those. That is then, this is now. And our latest guest on Soundtrackin', we welcome back Mr. Alex Garland. Joining me to discuss his latest film as writer-director, it's called Civil War. Now, the narrative follows a group of journalists who are travelling across the States during a rapidly escalating second American Civil War. Kirsten Dunst, Kayleigh Spiney, Wagner Moura and Nick Offerman are amongst the fantastic cast. Now, what do I say about this film? Well, to be honest, I kind of say all about how I feel about it in my conversation with Alex. It's great. It's thought-provoking. It's entertaining. It's a bit scary because of how the grasp of it happening seems, well, too close for comfort, really. Not only is Alex a great filmmaker, let's just take a second to think about Ex Machina, Annihilation, his TV series Devs, but he also knows, loves and appreciates the power of music in storytelling. As well as featuring some cracking needle drops, Civil War is scored by friends of the show, Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury, who very kindly provided us with some of their as yet unreleased cues. Thanks, gents. And we're going to begin with one of those, entitled Headshot. Congratulations on this film. It's funny because I heard you say something that you really like to for people to come out and have their own thoughts and questions about what they've just seen and it's been about 5 days since I've seen the film and I've still got so many questions that I'm kind of asking myself and no one else.
Good.
Which I don't know, is that a good thing?
Honestly, if it stayed with you and it's turning around in your head, then I'm delighted.
Does it give you questions, though? Do you still have questions about what it meant to you or what you wanted it to be?
Sort of, yes and no. I mean, you know, you spend a couple of years, or in fact, it's 4 years working on this. You've gone through your own stuff quite extensively. But then there's this other thing, which is when you release something out into the world, you discover that really it's all just a big exercise in subjective response and you can't really anticipate what other people will think or why they'll think it. I'm sort of used to that. I am used to that. But so there's a lot of unknowns, but they're not really unknowns that relate to me personally. It's more to do with, does it function as a conversation, which was its intention? And what conversation does it provoke, if any?
What I found really beautiful about it was the depth of the conversation and the variety of it being kind of a really big questions to the really small questions about relationship and about connection with people, you know, and cross-generational connections with people as well, and the importance of those relationships, you know, both strands of that, of being the older generation and looking to the young and the young looking to the old.
It's a funny thing. I'm really glad you said that. Some people probably think it's bleak. I don't think it's bleak because it's not misanthropic. There's lots of very nice people, some kind of funny people, people who are maybe tough, but actually if you look behind it, they're being really quite caring, mm-hmm. or they're being hopeful,
yeah.
or generous or brave or all sorts of things. To me, that precludes it being bleak. Yeah. In a way.
Yeah. And
because,
I think that's why it's so, you kind of go on the journey so immediately, because these characters draw you in, and that relationship within that car and those, yeah.
Well, great. Yeah. If that's how it works on you,
yeah,
awesome.
Totally. Apart from Jesse, terrifying. Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, that one scene is just extraordinary. And it's like, you know, those, what kind of American are six words? And those six words are like, boom. Terrifying.
Cool.
Yeah, really, really great.
He delivers them pretty well, doesn't he?
What was the reality of filming that, you know, in terms of playing with that scene and how he would deliver it, and the physicality of it as well, with like with the gun, you know, with the gun and the glasses and his stance, and because he's almost like a baby the way he's holding that gun sometimes.
I think that we've probably spoken before about this. I think often directorial roles get really overstated, and I find it boring and annoying. But the main thing I did there, so you say the glasses, for example, that wasn't me. He went out, he said, I think this guy should have glasses. He bought like 8 pairs of glasses, and then he laid them out and said, which ones do you like? And we just discussed them and ended up with the red ones. But that was really initiated and generated by him, not me. What I was doing there partly is really setting a scene, an environment of a mass grave and a context and stuff like that. And then what I did was on that scene, try to get the cameras as physically far away from the actors as possible. So you know film sets, you know that a lot of times an actor will be acting, talking to someone, but there'll be a lens right here. Mm. And or even sometimes it's a clean shot and the person is behind the actor, or the actor is behind the camera, or whatever it happens to be. What we did there was create a kind of bubble around everyone. And shot off really long lenses from a distance. Now, partly I like the long lens look. It has a particular quality to it. But it also meant that they were kind of unprotected within that bubble. And it added to the tension. And it was a very interesting scene to shoot. There are times where you realize you are putting actors through something that is actually difficult and actually a bit disturbing.
Yeah.
And that was one of them.
Yeah, I read about Wagner being kind of really sort of just sort of...
It was very hard for him.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Let's talk music.
Sure.
Because
you like music.
It's a brilliant conversation with this film. Jeff and Ben, who I love. Been on email with Jeff this morning already about various things. But it's that kind of really brilliant...
Is he being blunt?
Always.
Yeah.
Always. Honest. He's always honest.
I really genuinely loved him.
Me too. Me too. With this, though, in terms of what was your journey to working out how you would navigate both Needle Drop's existing music and the score that him and Ben provided? Because there are a couple of moments where, you know, because you're in the film and you can't kind of, you don't know every piece of music that's coming up that's an existing piece. And so there were times where I was like, oh, kind of wasn't kind of totally aware if it was score or if it was a Needle Drop and stuff. And that's really clever, because I think you don't want that kind of big sort of sign coming up, this is a Needle Drop, you might recognise it. So that kind of world, apart from De La Soul, which we'll talk about.
Which you'd have got. Lots of people won't get. That's partly
word.
Because of the age we are.
Yeah. But talk to me about working out music within this and how you were going to navigate, how much Ben and
Partly Jeff and Ben and me, we have a rolling conversation about music that starts before shooting.
Yeah.
So I always send them the script and we start talking about it early. And it's organic and it's exhausting for everybody, but it's also kind of taken seriously. And we've been through this a few times.
Yeah.
And we know what we like and what we don't like, and what would worry us and what would make us feel calm.
Thank you.
There were some funny problems in this to do with sort of problems that you wouldn't normally have to contend with in a film somehow. In a sense, this film is either contemporary or just slightly ahead. But if you put a bit of absolutely contemporary music in it, instantly you dated it. Mm-hmm. You made a statement about where and when this was happening. And it started to interfere with the narrative mm-hmm. and actually the themes and all sorts of stuff. So we were quite limited about the time frames we could use. And then what we're doing is calling each other up saying, have you thought about this? Or, okay, this is a really weird idea. Let's try that.
Yeah.
Jeff actually had introduced me a while ago to Silver Apples, who he loves. And
Love Fingers, might be the best named song ever.
Yeah, and also immediately sets a kind of tone for everything. Sometimes also there's another function you've got to think of, which is you take Apocalypse Now, opening sequence, you know, one of film history's greatest bits of cinema. It's absolutely stunning filmmaking.
Yeah.
But is it anti-war? To me, it's not really anti-war. It doesn't have to be anti-war. Mm-hmm. It's not required to be. But whatever it is, it's not really anti-war. It's something else. One of the reasons it's not is those opening moments where all kinds of horrors or strange things can follow. But basically, you're watching very beautiful, sinister but beautiful napalm clouds exploding over palm trees with graceful, pulsing helicopters dissolving to ceiling fans mm-hmm. and this rather sort of striking guy lying on in a bed and thoughts floating through his mind. And against all of that is the end, the doors. That's seductive. And we did not want to be seductive in that way at those moments. And one of the things about De La Soul was it felt so aggressive on its arrival and so jarring, but a really beautiful kind of jarring where it also made a strange kind of sense, mm-hmm. but it was constantly kind of nudging you about why does this make sense? Or what are you feeling right now as you watch these guys get executed? Where are you with this? And it's also hitting beat points on the cuts in a way that is dissonant. Anyway, it wasn't just period. It wasn't just this is a cool track. It was also what effect is the track having, not just dramatically, but thematically. And there was a lot going on.
Down to the skit. A baby is brought into a world of pits. And if we could have talked that soon in a delivery room, it would have asked the nurse for a hit. The reason for this? The mother is a jerk. Excuse me, junkie, which brought the work of the older to a new life. What a way. But this what a way has been a way of today. Anyway, push couldn't shove me to understand a path to a base set. Cause Schumer should have raced it in a first wave. Cause second wave for believers and believers will walk to it then even talk to it and say, nah, can't have none of that. Tell him what to say, Mace.
We tried a lot of different bits.
Yeah.
It was a lot of conversation. And then there was the stuff they wrote themselves.
Yeah. Which kind of really, that the...
Sorry, was that way, that was way
that
too
was long. Amazing.
That was, way
that was
too
perfect.
Long.
No, it wasn't. Silver Apples was a really good, like you say, kind of connective tissue almost in a way to quite a lot of what Jeff and Ben then kind of create in this? It's got a, there's a relationship, I think, between those two things in terms of what they
Yeah. Well, after he'd introduced me to them, I was thinking, it's no surprise Jeff loves this band.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, but then you've also got those moments where you've got that possibility of diegetic music, you know, when we're in the clothes shop.
Yeah.
And the radio's playing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on a road trip, you would assume there would be, you're in a car, you're on a road trip, you have music and stuff, but that's not really the case with these guys because of, well, because of the nature of the journey, I think, more so than ever. But the clothes shop.
It also carries, I thought, a funny implication.
Yeah.
It's only an implication, which is that a lot of music stations are shut down. Like they're blocked, they're jammed. Yeah. And if you switch on the radio, what you hear is the president giving propaganda speeches.
Yeah, because you said probably turns it off, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. So it sort of implies something subtle.
Yeah.
Which may or may not land, you never know with that stuff.
But then with and that town scene, you know, where they arrive in what looks like kind of almost Disneyland in a way, you know, in terms of going into that clothes shop and how there's such an eerie weight on that kind of, you know, when they come out and the guys are on the roof sort of thing as well. Making those choices on what that would be as well, that's got to have it's got to fit where they're stepping into, what, you know, is there a kind of message behind that choice as well?
To my memory, I think I said to Jake, the editor, and Jeff and Ben, I don't know what goes there. Just stick something. The two hardest choices, to my memory, were De La Soul, because it was so odd as a choice, but just felt right, but felt like a risk at the same time, but in a good way. And also, there's a forest fire scene moving into the arrival at a massive military base. And we tried lots and lots of different tracks for that and ended up with a bit of country music, which I was particularly happy with because I like country music. So I was delighted.
Oh, how breakers roll, keep pulling me farther from shore. Thoughts turn to a love so kind, just keep me losing my mind. So enticing, deep dark sea, it's so easy drowning.
Choice of, is it Suicide? Yep. Dream Baby Dream at the end?
Yeah, there's a couple of Suicide tracks.
It's kind of, you know, when something just feels like perfection in a moment, it's kind of, it's almost like kind of being at the cinema and having a physical kind of arm come around you and kind of go, it's all right, or kind of let's talk about it kind of thing. So it's got such a physical, it had a physical reaction to me when it kind of came on as well.
I absolutely love that bit of positioning. I also personally pay a lot of attention to the lyrics.
Yeah.
In the needle drops as well. That felt like a really odd but appropriate lyric.
Dream baby dream, dream baby dream, dream baby dream, dream baby dream, forever. Keep on dreaming about now, baby. Keep on dreaming about now forever.
When you think about the scenes like I was just saying to someone out there, for the whole kind of White House siege, you know, kind of moment at the end, I felt like I didn't breathe for that whole kind of moment, because you've taken us into this environment with these characters so immediately in the film. And so the way you've chosen to shoot that, but also sonically, like the sounds...
Well, it does a trick in a funny way, which is it begins that sequence with Ben playing an acoustic piece. I'm pretty sure it's Ben.
Yeah.
Which lulls you in a way... and then it gives over to some very extreme, ultra-realistic sound design of actual weapons firing as if they are close to you, and they are very, very loud when they're close to you, and then it just doesn't stop. There's a little sort of sleight of hand in there to make it land slightly harder.
The choreography behind something like that, you know, in terms of for both for your cast, but, you know, for production, in terms of that whole dance that happens kind of through those kind of corridors and into those that building and stuff, is it's extraordinary. It's an amazing piece of cinema to watch and experience.
Well, thank you. Certainly in the corridor at the end, there's someone I'd want to name check in that case, a guy called Ray Mendoza. Had a very good stunt team led by this guy, Jeff Dashnor. So outside, you're seeing a lot of Dash's work. But when they get into that corridor, Ray Mendoza, who I'm about to make a film with again, I don't know how sort of detailed to be in a way, but basically I'm a not auteur type director. I'm a delegating director, get people around me who are really good at their job and then they elevate it. Ray's a great example of that. I did a sort of almost like film philosophy thing, which I said, look, we're making a story about photojournalists. The actors as photojournalists and also the camera crew, we are going to function here like photojournalists. Mm-hmm. So these guys are just going to do their thing and we're going to shoot it. We are not setting up anything for the camera. They are doing their thing and then we figure out how to shoot it on the fly. Whereas, so Ray, ex-Navy SEAL, brought in a bunch of Navy SEAL colleagues positioned with an actor. And all I said to Ray was, just do what you would do. If you had to get from here to there and we'll position a bunch of people shooting at you, what would you do to get from here to there? That was it. And all of that choreography and their dialogue between each other was just simply what they did. I had no input into that. And then we shot it like a, in a way, a bit like a bulletproof documentary crew. It was fascinating. And then when I cut it, I did no time compressions. So the strange silences and pauses are them doing what they do as they restructure for another burst of explosive movement and stuff. So the person I'm name-checking is Ray Mendoza. He put that together beautifully. And those guys were awesome. They just did it again and again and again and again. Never a word of complaint. Total commitment.
Wow.
Very, very nice guys to work with.
That's amazing.
The film Ray and I are about to shoot, in a way, is an extension of that sequence.
Because there are kind of, it feels like there's moments of the film, the grammar of it is really documentary, you know, that lovely
all its cues are either lived experience or news footage or documentary. Or
the stills are beautiful, the way you kind of inject those into it as well.
Yeah.
It's great.
We tried to reference something. You know, remember Handmaid's Tale, the TV show?
Yeah.
Did a very good job of showing shocking things that every time you saw them, you realised, oh, there's a real world analogue to that.
Yeah.
We were doing something like that, I would say.
Talking about kind of future films, are we talking genuinely 2030 for 28 years later then? That will be 28 years later.
That's Danny. I just wrote a script. Ask him. I wrote a script. And Danny, when does he start? He starts pretty soon. I mean, they're in prep.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Are you excited about that? About that kind of world having another kind of, you know, platform?
I don't know. I mean, I've been around too long. I'm
you say that
watching...
then, that means the same for me then, you see.
But I am. You haven't been around too long. I've been around too long. I think that I'm working with some people I've known well for a very, very long time. And I'm interested. That's what I really am, is I'm interested. I'm interested watching. I haven't worked with Danny for a long time.
Yeah.
I haven't worked with another director in that way for a long time. So I just find it, I find it interesting. Am I hopeful? I need a whole bunch of questions answered.
Well, listen, congratulations on this. It's always a pleasure to get to chat to you about it and just how passionate you are about all those collaborations that you have, you know, that come together to make this a brilliant piece of cinema. Thanks so
cool.
much, Alex. Thank you.
Cheers. All right, Edith.
From the score to Civil War, that's Refugees by Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Alex Garland. My huge thanks to Alex for taking the time to talk to me. It's always a treat getting the chance to chat to him. Civil War is in UK cinemas as of April the 12th. And if you want to hear the live chat with Alex, Jeff and Ben about Annihilation, head to edithbowman.com where you'll be able to find every single episode of the podcast. We have a YouTube channel called Soundtrack and Extra, which we'd love for you to subscribe to. And please do follow us on socials as well at Soundtracking UK. And tell your friends if you like what you hear. Next up, we have another Soundtracking Everyman Film Club, as I mentioned at the start of the show, with Sam Taylor-Johnson talking Back to Black, along with help of our music supervisor, Ian Cook, and music producer, Giles Martin. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.